lie is that we think that only one kind of person can fulfill the dream that God has for them.
I mean,
that's the advantage that we have as children of God, is that we don't have to have any of those things. We don't need to read the self-help books. We don't have to do the 10-step plan. We don't have to do any of that. We just step forward in all of our messiness and all of our flaws and all of our less than-ness, and he fills it all in for us.
Compassion International is a ministry I dearly love. They're doing such good work all over the world to help release kids from poverty in Jesus' name. Many children have been waiting over a year for a sponsor. Maybe you've never considered sponsorship before, but I hope that you will. Please know that it's much more than a financial commitment. It is a relationship that you form that feels hopeless. It's a small sacrifice for a lot of us, but it means everything to a child in need. Go to the show notes for the link to do this, to see children who need sponsorship right now, or compassion.com/Joe. And as a thank you for your sponsorship, we're going to send you my book, Whole, as a free gift. I have a short list of people that I really want to talk to, and you've been on it for about 2 years already.
Aww.
Does that make you feel flattered or weirded out?
Why did it take you 2 years to ask?
Well, I don't know. That's a good question.
Flattered, for sure.
Yeah. I have certain people that I'm like, I would like to talk to her. I think she's got a really cool way. I will tell you, full disclosure, right off the top, I'm fascinated with people who know how to cook. So there's that as well. I think, do you find yourself with people that are good at things that maybe you're not? And I don't know what that is for you, but for me, I'm not a awesome cook. So I like people who can cook. Like, I just kind of want to watch them. I want to observe. So is there something for you that you're like, I'm not really good at this, and so I like to watch people who are?
It's more of a personality thing. Like, I think about some of the people that I hang out with, and they tend to be very confident, assertive people.
Yeah.
And I don't see myself that way. And so I think subconsciously or consciously, I'm like, well, if I hang out with these people, maybe it'll just like rub off on me, like a stain, like a wood stain or something, you know? And so that's probably what I find myself attracted to more often.
Yeah, you know? I get that too, Artie. I think that's a thing. I think that's a real thing. Like, because I'm attracted to certain personalities too. And I'm like, I really love this personality. Usually for me, it's warmth. It's, you know, someone who is real. I have an aversion to people who I feel like are putting on. So I'm attracted. I tend to be attracted to the same types of people. I like all types of people. You probably do too. I like the eclectic like world that we live in, and I like to decorate eclectically, and I like all kinds of things, but I always end up with the same type of friends probably.
Yeah. Well, it was a weird, rude awakening. I don't know that much about the Enneagram. I'm in two minds about it, but, you know, one day, one of the people that I work with on my management team was like talking me through it a little bit. And she goes, well, I'm an eight. Do you know what you are? And I was like, no, I don't know. And she said, well, just so you know, everybody that you work with is an eight. And I was like, okay. And then my husband and I were like, let's bond, let's do this thing. And he did the test, and he comes walking in, he goes, guess what? And I said, what? He goes, I'm an eight. And so I think I apparently am a nine, whatever that means. And so I am this little like peacemaking flower in the midst of all these roaring lion eights. You know what I mean? That's how I feel.
Yeah.
And so if that is true, then there is something about that personality I cannot stop myself from being attracted to, you know?
Well, I'm really glad to hear that, because guess what?
What?
I'm an eight in your group. You set me up so perfectly for that. Yes, Artie, that means we have to be friends. That makes me so happy.
There we go. It is written somewhere.
It's a thing. It is written somewhere. So let me introduce people to you in case they don't know who you are, which would baffle my mind. But anyway, Artie Sequera. I knew I was going to do this.
You did it great. No. You said it right. Sequera.
Okay. Cooking show host, cookbook author, journalist, television producer, and food personality. You won a show that I watched. And I have to tell you, I watched you win it, by the way.
Oh, my gosh.
Food Network star. Now you're a regular on the Food Network on various shows. Is the show Food Network star still on, Artie?
No. No, okay. The last one was, I think the season that Christian Petroni won. And that was a number of years ago.
Well, that makes me sad because I thought that was a cool show. That was cool.
It was a cool show. I think for some reason, it just wasn't doing as well as it did back then. I think it just is sort of one of those things where like, there just weren't enough slots for all these people who were winning, you know, because the prize was to get your own cooking show.
Yeah.
All, you know, the 7-8 of us got our own cooking show one year after another, you know, so
yeah,
I think they just ran out of room.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that I hear that. There's always, you know, there's lots of red tape in this kind of stuff. So we get it. Mm-hmm. Were you on TV? Because I don't know too much about you, but were you on TV before that show besides YouTube? Because I know you have a YouTube. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's
how I started.
Okay. So that's how you started. I know you have, you know, the producer background and so forth, but I just wondered about your TV experience before that show.
Yeah, I hadn't been in front of the camera except for, so all I ever wanted to do was to be an international correspondent like Kris Jenner Amanpour. That's all I ever wanted to do. I wanted to go to all the places where all the bad things were happening and sort of shine a light on it and tell people what was going on. Mm. And so when I went to university to study journalism and then when I graduated, I got a job at CNN. And of course, you don't get on camera at CNN
right
out of school. So I started behind the camera. I did some on-camera stuff when I was at school, obviously, but I was always trying. I was always sort of trying to figure out, well, where do I fit in here? And where do I fit in here? And it's ironically, even now at this part of my career, I was just writing in my journal yesterday. I was like, I don't feel like I fit in here. Where do I fit in here? And so a little part of me now that I'm in my 40s is like, wait, maybe this is just what everybody feels at all times, that they're like, I don't fit the mold. There seems to be a mold. And maybe the fact that there's a mold is a lie. I don't know. I'm trying to figure that out.
There's no mold, Artie. I don't think there's a mold, but I think we all think there's a mold. So I like what you're saying here, because I do think that to a certain degree, and especially when we're younger,
we
think there's some type of a mold. Maybe even to some degree, we want there to be, because we feel like that then is controllable, right? So if there's some kind of a model that we could follow, if there's steps, because a lot of us are good at steps. Like, I'm a great list maker and I can follow a model and a formula. And if there was a mold, then maybe I could get my way there. Cause I can achieve, you know, I can do that. But I think there is something freeing and also probably a little disappointing in realizing there isn't a mold. And I hope maybe it can be freeing, because we can say, wow, that can be a way that we actually are free to say, God, what do you want to do with my life?
Yeah.
And, you know, but yeah. So because I wonder, the reason why I asked that is because I was wondering, was this like a goal to be a, because you get this new life on TV, right? So this is my brain.
Yeah.
This is the way my brain was working. I'm thinking she gets this new life on TV after she wins this show. Mm-hmm. Was that like, okay, now I have an accidental career on TV? Mm-hmm. Or was that like, oh, this was the goal, I got there?
No, I mean, so when I was little, there were two games that I would play. And one was cooking show host. And one was a news presenter, sort of like the BBC. This is the BBC. And I would read the newspaper to my imaginary camera. So somewhere in my mind, I had cameras in front of me at all times.
Yeah.
And so being on TV in that way was like, wow, well, this is a dream come true. But boy, this was not the way that I thought that it would be. Like, you know, and so on the one hand, it actually was super helpful, because it meant that anytime I was sort of getting stressed out about what I was doing, I was like, I had perspective. I was like, oh, I could be standing outside of a courthouse waiting for Martha Stewart to walk out for 7 months in a row. You know what I mean? Which is what my friend had to do. There are other ways that you can be working in television that are miserable.
Yes.
And, you know, me having my own cooking show and trying to come up with recipes is, you know, it's okay, lady. Like, cool your heels. It's not that bad, you know? So yes, it was, and again, you know, I think I have had so many plans in my life. Like, I love to-do lists, and I'm not necessarily like a vision caster, but I love to-do lists. And so there have been lots of plans that I had for my life. I was going to be a reporter. That didn't happen. Okay, I'll be a producer, and then I'll work my way in front of the camera. That didn't happen. Okay, I'm going to make a documentary. That did happen. Oh, good. Now I'm going to make another one. Nope. It's just been, I won and I get my own cooking show. Great. Now I'm going to have this wicked long career. Oh, it's canceled after 3 seasons. It's just been one thing after another. So I have given up. I know that the world talks a lot about, and maybe this works for some people, having goals and working towards goals and vision casting and all this stuff. I don't do it anymore. Yeah. I don't. And I am much happier for it. It is much better for me to just go, Lord, wherever you go, I will follow. And it is frustrating, and I'm not patient. So I think that God is his story for me, definitely. Yeah, it's taking too long, but I think that that's the point, you know, is that who are you to say it's taking too long? Mm. You know, who are you to say how long your career should last? It's all up to him.
You know, I love hearing that, and I really relate to it, because I think, you know, I've had so many plans in my life already. I've had so many, you know, plans within plans, you know. I'm great at that, and I'm also great at thinking that I know what plans are best. And you know, I feel like in some ways my road's been so long and windy, mm-hmm. and not at all predictable, but I'm always reminded that, you know, at the end of it all, or you know, at the end of every sort of plan that doesn't go right, And then the Lord has me doing something else, I'm always like, wow, he really knows, you know, he really knows what is better for me. And I would have resisted this, or this, I would have never wanted to do this, or whatever the case may be.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So that's super powerful, I think.
Oh, 1,000%. Yeah.
I want to tell you about something that has changed the way I sleep. I don't say this lightly, it's really true. If you are in the market for literally the world's best sheets, softest, temperature regulating, Cozy Earth is your next purchase. It was voted Oprah's favorite thing 4 years in a row for a reason. Made from bamboo viscose, moisture wicking, and 10 times softer than cotton. Also responsibly made and sourced. I bought these sheets. I didn't even tell my husband I got us new sheets. He asked me about them the next day after sleeping on them. True story. We both became a believer. Everyone I've referred to buy them has fallen in love, and you will too. I also love Cozy Earth's pajamas and even have their soft ribbed midi skirt and tank. I'm telling you, from sheets to socks to pajamas, these make incredible gifts and are important staples to have in your home. I have a 40% off code for you right now, Lisa-40. Link and code is in the show notes. So go right now and get in on this. You will not regret it. So you were known on the show as Artie Party. Were you known before the show as Artie Party, or was that like a name that was coined with the show?
Well, no. Artie Party was the name of my YouTube cooking show that I had, my husband and I put together, and it was a cooking variety show, and it's still on YouTube. I am many, many pounds lighter.
I know.
I just feel like I need to say it first before somebody else says it. But in any case, that name had actually come about because my husband and I met at university. He was studying theater and I was studying journalism, and we started dating and realized that we both loved food. Maybe a little unhealthily. And so I remember one Valentine's Day, we're sitting in his car looking out at Lake Michigan, each of us with a pint of Ben and Jerry's. Mm. And he was like, if you had an ice cream flavor, you should call it Artie Party. And I was like, that's so dumb. I don't like that name at all. And then look at it. Like, it has stuck. decades later. Yeah.
It's kind of great though, Artie. It's kind of fantastic. Well, first of all, your name's fantastic. Artie's fantastic.
Thanks.
And Artie Party is perfect. And especially because you're like this sort of bright and sunny. You come off obviously as that. Yeah. I'm sure you are too in real life, but I think it's great. And I mean, I love it. I love that it kind of stuck, especially something you thought was dumb. Isn't it funny how some things you're like, oh, I hate this. Okay, I guess I'll go with this.
I know. I mean, from the teeny tiny things to the really big things in my life, it is very apparent to me that I don't have a clue. So I need to stop acting as if I do.
At least you listen, Artie. At least you listen and you're willing to pivot. I think that's better than like initial reaction to me.
That's true.
So you have a cookbook with this name, and then you have this incredible thing that I want to talk about for a minute. It's called My Family Recipe Journal. It's got prayers and scriptures. Here's one of the reasons I love this so much, because when I got married, by the way, almost 27 years ago,
congrats.
When I got married, thank you. My mom did this. So she made me this. It was honestly a makeshift My Family Recipe Journal, but of course didn't know it.
Yeah.
And I still have it. Of course, it's like got the coil binding she put in there our family famous veggie dip, which everyone gets addicted to. And, you know, an apple pie recipe and, you know, these chicken spaghetti and these like staples of our family, right?
Yeah.
That none of us can quit. And so I love it because I literally to this day will go and, you know, like sort through that thing, but you have made something gorgeous and it's kind of that same idea, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, so the backstory is that, I have a relationship now with Dayspring. And so Dayspring was like, hey, we have this idea of doing this family recipe journal. And I was like, huh. And then I thought about it and I was like, again, Lord, how did you figure this out? Because family recipe journals have been a huge part of not only my life, but my mom's life and her mom's life, you know, where my grandmother, Lucia, she passed away at an early age and her cooking was so great that every single one of her children, everyone that knows her talks about it to this day. But because she passed away early, she never got to write them down. And so all of that went with her. And so my mom and her sisters, all of them are avid recipe writers downers.
they have love it.
Huge like these diary books, you know, like your day diary. And they write all the recipes in there. And even just recently, I went to a family wedding and my aunt was like, well, the recipe I had written down, your mummy came over and she corrected it because I had written it down wrong. You know what I mean? It's such a huge part of not only the cooking, but about the relationship. It's about passing these things down from generation to generation. And so it was such a gift to me when Dayspring was like, hey, we have this idea. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so perfect. I feel very, very passionately about these recipe journals.
Awesome. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, it's beautiful. And so just describe a little bit of what's in it, because I think it's gorgeous. Yeah.
Yeah. So first of all, it's gorgeous. It really is. It's mustard with sort of a gold foil on the outside. I didn't bring one with me, but the idea is that I wanted it to look and feel like a jewelry box, like an heirloom, something you could keep on your counter and you would think is beautiful. Maybe someone walking into your kitchen would think is beautiful and say, hey, what's this? And then you get to talk about your family, you know, and their story. And maybe you're the first one. You know what I mean? That's okay too. You could be the first one. So it's separated into 8 sections. It's blank. So you can figure out what each of those sections are. Every page has scripture on it. Every section starts with a prayer, and they're all color coded, so it's easy for you to find them. And the colors I chose based on like these beautiful heirloom saris that are in my mom's closet. So it just has this feeling of this is something kind of old and precious, and something you would kind of tuck into a trousseau and hand down to the next generation, you know. And you can find it on the Dayspring website.
It's really gorgeous. We're going to link it in the show notes. And I love it so much. I really think it is such a special thing to give someone who is getting married for Christmas. I mean, what a special gift. Those are the kinds of gifts that you never let go of, you know?
Yeah.
They really are. They're the things that matter the most. Even to have, you know, someone you love, your mother, your grandmother, their handwriting in something like that. That's one of the things I treasure the most about the thing that my mom made me when we got married is I have her handwriting in it.
Right.
And I love that so much. So I love that you've done this.
Yeah. Handwriting is really important to me. I think, you know, obviously we don't touch a lot of real stuff anymore. Most of the time we're touching this plastic chip thing. Yep. And so everything is available to us. Someone's handwriting, them writing it on a piece of paper, you will never get that anywhere else. That is a unique thing and a unique moment in time. And there is something about running your finger across someone's handwriting that is really intimate, actually. Mm. It has the power to connect. I remember in the old days, I mean, you'd write your resume out, you would handwrite it, and they would judge your character based on your handwriting. You know what I mean?
Handwriting analysis is a whole thing, right?
Yes. Yes. I mean, why do you think my handwriting is so neat? My mom was like, they are not going to misjudge you, sister. You know? So I think it's really, I think that the fact that, listen, none of us needs more stuff. We don't need more stuff. And so if I put things out, I want them to be things that are really meaningful, that you're going to want to hang on to, and that, I don't know, your kids are going to fight over so that they get to have it once you go, because that's going to happen between me and my sisters over my mom's recipe journal. That's a fact, you know?
Yep. So it's true.
We need things that break through this, what is the word? Like, we get this immediate satisfaction out of things constantly, right? I think it's really funny that some of the things that we've gravitated towards over the past couple of years are things where you cannot rush the process. Sourdough bread, you cannot rush the process. You know what I mean? Yes. You just got to wait. Growing things in your garden, you just got to wait. Mm. And so there's something in us that's kind of longing to just slow down. And I think writing down those recipes forces you to slow down and forces you to write down. I forgot to mention this. There is a place at the top of every page that says memories. Because for me, the thing about a family recipe is it's always attached to a memory. And that's what makes the recipe so special.
That's actually so true. You know, anytime any of these shows, right? Any of these cooking competition shows, well, besides ones that are like just kind of fun, cool, you know, cutie shows, but like ones that you have these people that are competing, it's always, I want you to bring a family memory into a dish that you make. Mm-hmm. And those are always the best episodes, right? Because those are the ones that are the most meaningful. People cook with love. They cook with heart. Those when you have the best food, and you know, people are always bragging about the food and those kinds of situations. I think that's so true. You know, I was actually just talking to someone yesterday about even the writing process, Artie, which is the world that I live in. Mm-hmm. And so I know that the cultivation it takes, you know, for me, I think anytime I try to write something quickly, it's always disastrous. Everything, you know, takes, you know, consideration. And it's a scriptural concept because it's all about abiding. I mean, when you think about abiding, that is a concept of time. And, you know, abiding is not a quick concept. That's not treasured in culture, but it very much is in our spiritual life, which leads me to ask you this question. Your life has been interesting. You were born in India. You were brought up in Dubai. You were educated in British school. You became this journalist, this producer, YouTube cooking channel. Where in all of that did you come to know Jesus?
So the part of India that my family is from is Catholic and has been for centuries. So I grew up, you know, my dad wore the little Mary medallion around his neck. We said the rosary. We did all of those things. It was really, really important and a huge part of our lives. But it wasn't real to me. I was like, God is real. But it wasn't, it never was revealed to me that like you could actually have a relationship. It felt like a one-way street kind of thing. And then he was just sort of pulling the strings and testing you and waiting for the other shoe to drop. And then for you, then he'd be like, gotcha. You know, that's what I thought it was. So I think it was in my 20s, I had gotten married. My husband came to faith, I think, when he was a teenager, like 13. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so we would have these, and he's Protestant, Presbyterian probably. And so we would have these long conversations where I was like, don't you talk about Mary like that? You know what I mean? I remember the first time he explained the whole concept of grace to me, which in my Catholic upbringing, I don't want to speak for anybody else's Catholic upbringing. In my Catholic upbringing, that was never taught to me.
Yeah.
And I was like, this makes no sense. And it got me angry, actually. I was incensed by it because I felt like grace was unjust. Because I'm working really hard. I'm ticking all the boxes. Mm. This dude who doesn't tick any of the boxes, he gets to get into.
Right.
That's not okay, you know? And so I had a really hard time with it. And I think I probably came to faith when I was like 26 or 27 or something like that. And it was not via head knowledge. You know what I mean? It was a personal encounter with the Lord. And he didn't say, quote unquote, say anything. Mm. He just put his hands on my shoulders and he looked me right in the eye. And that was it. I was like, okay, well, I mean, I get goosebumps every time I think about it. I just was like, oh, okay, that's it. Yep. And so that's when it happened. And it was, you know, my life actually got harder after that. It did not get easier. Mm. I like to tell people that, you know, like he's not a vending machine.
Yep.
And so, but I, there's nothing better, really. Mm. There's really nothing better than walking with the Lord. It is hard. It is hard. It is frustrating. It makes me angry. Sometimes I punch him in the chest, all those things. but it is the best thing ever.
It really is. I love, you know, I follow you on social media and you're vocal about your faith and you're in the sense that you don't try to hide it. Right. So you're not trying to hide that you love Jesus and you're honest about that. Has there ever been a time that you felt a tension between your faith and your career at all?
I mean, I think, you know, the project I'm working on right now, and it's funny you say writing takes time. I'm like, I got a deadline, Lisa.
I know. Believe me, I know deadlines. I'm on one too, Artie. Right as we speak. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. And so the next project I'm doing is a full-on Jesus project. It's a devotional cookbook. It's for Day Spring again. And so I'm writing 50 devotionals and 50 recipes that attach to the devotional.
Yeah.
And so there is part of me that's going, okay, I feel like I know who I'm writing it for. I'm writing it for me, really, for women like me who at 4 o'clock, 4:30 are like, I've been through this wicked long day. It's been really challenging. And now I've got to make food. Like, what? You know? Yeah. And so I'm trying to speak into that moment of frustration and tension and say, okay, let's turn this into a sacred moment. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely a huge part of me that goes, if I do this, will I get pigeonholed and will I lose my spot in the secular?
Yep.
I mean, obviously all of it is sacred, like everything, Food Network is under God's command, right? Everything is under God's command. And so I fully believe that, you know, the fact that I'm still around is his doing. I don't know why, but I am nervous about it. You know what I mean? Because I just don't know what's going to happen next. I'm speaking super honestly, maybe a little scarily now, but it's, you know, once I go in this direction, can I ever go back?
Yeah.
Will they accept me on that side? Or will they go, oh, she's one of those Christian people. And then they make assumptions about, and then it, the whole nine, you know? So I have that tension. And yet I, again, have had one instance after another where I thought I knew where everything was going and I didn't. And things have crashed and burned around me, things that I wanted. And, you know, what has revealed itself in the ashes has been 17 million times more beautiful. So I've kind of just got to, you know, I think that's why why the Israelites built altars and we write songs and, you know, we get tattoos and things like that is because we forget so quickly, especially when we're drowning.
Yep.
And so I have to look backwards and go, okay, he knows what he's doing. I have to trust that I'm exactly where he wants me to do, to be, and just keep my eyes on him. I can't, if I look at the snakes on the ground, I'm going to I'm going to run the other direction.
Yeah. Yeah. It is scary because I can't speak for where you are, but I do think it is when we really think of sometimes about what we're doing. I mean, here's what I can liken it to, which is not a real good example, but it really made me think about this. Sometimes, Artie, when I'm in the middle of this is honest. You were honest. I'm going to be honest. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when I'm in the middle of speaking, which I do as a part of my career, right? Mm-hmm. When I get up on the stage in front of, maybe it's a couple thousand people sometimes, right? So I'm, in front of thousands or whatever. If I think about what I'm actually doing, I will want to crawl in a hole. Because when you think about the fact that you've got all those people listening to you and how inadequate you are for that moment, and how absolutely you could ruin your own life. Like, I'm really aware of how many issues I have and much of a mess I am, right?
Yes.
So it's an odd thing that you're doing up there, having people listen to your every word that you're saying. Mm-hmm. When I think about it like that, if I were to come out of that space of like, God, I know you've called me to this, and this is yours, and this is about the Holy Spirit speaking and all of these things, I will absolutely not do it, because there have been times in my life I've wanted to run away from a call of God on my life. And speaking is a prime example of that. It's always been the scariest thing I've ever done. But when I do it and I am just doing it with it's not blind following God, Artie, because like you said, God has proven faithful. This is a reminder of, this is a Deuteronomy 30 like speech to myself of like, remember the faithfulness of God in those moments. Yeah. And even before I get up to speak, I say, God has proven faithful time and time again. When you didn't have the ability, when you were sick, or when you were fighting with your husband, or when whatever the case may be, right? I don't know. I mean, that probably doesn't even make sense to anyone listening right now. But what I'm saying,
I think it does. Okay, I think it does. Yeah, I think
saying, whatever we're
it's
doing,
it's not unreasonable.
Right. Whatever we're doing. Yeah.
People sometimes look at. I think they go, "Oh, you kind of have to dismiss all your reason and just." Like the first step of the staircase, whatever Martin Luther King Jr. said, faith is the first step and not seeing the whole staircase.
Yes.
That is true. That is true. But you step on the step because you have stepped on millions of steps before that. It's not unreasonable. And so, and it's also not unreasonable to go, okay, well, in this particular thing, I've had no experience of you coming through here. So I'm nervous about it, and I think that's okay too. I get completely what you're saying. I think it sort of relates to what we were saying at the beginning about the mold. Mm-hmm. And I think if we, like, God has chosen you, Lisa, and me, Artie, and whoever is listening for your particular role in your life. And he did not choose the mold. He chose you. And so I think if I then go up on stage, or if I write my devotionals according to some imaginary mold, it's going to fail. Because God didn't choose the mold, he chose you. And so, and so often when people have failed, right, and we're seeing people fail, it's because something about what they were doing was not actually authentic to who they were. Hmm. You know what I mean? It was authentic to a mold that they thought that they needed to be.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So and I think you do it. I know I do it. Like, just walk up there and be like, I'm really scared right now. like, I don't feel like I have anything really to tell you, but I'm just going to tell you what I wrote down, and we'll see what God does with that. To me, that's so much more interesting, is to watch someone go up there and say, I am not feeling it, but we're just going to go for it anyway. I think that's much more intriguing to people.
Well, I think this is why I always write really honestly, because I think people have a perception of me, and that is, the perception is, she is a woman of complete confidence all the time, right? Or she is a woman of complete strength. People are drawn to that strength. And it's true, Artie. I'm the person that you want to call. If your house is burning down, call me. Like,
okay.
I'm the one. Well, I mean, not really. I don't know how to put out a fire, but But what I'm saying is, like, I'm a person who knows how to do strength well. So yeah. if you're having a crisis, I'm the girlfriend for you. Mm-hmm. I'm terrible at 100 things, but I am good in strength. But that's the way God's gifted me. It's not because I've chosen that. But I think in that, it's important for me to let people know and let people in and say, there's a real vulnerability here. And I also have this enormous tenderness for people that I love and for the hurting people of this world. And sometimes it threatens to really take me under. Also, I have a huge justice meter, which of course, that's a whole other issue. But I think this is really important that we're talking about this, because I mean, there's several things at play here. One of the things we were just discussing was the Lord. And I have to tell you that he convicted me lately in this sense of like blind trust, because I was talking to the Lord about trust, and because I'm writing, I've just written a new book, and I was talking about the fact of trusting God. And I was, and he said to me, Lord, Lisa, this is not blind trust. Like, you are not, when you trust me, it isn't blind trust, because mm-hmm. you have a track record with me. And I want you to remind people that you are, it's not like taking a leap into a literal place of that is completely unknown. Because I think we say that a lot in Christianity. I think we say, well, I'm just taking a leap here. I'm just mm-hmm. blind. Are you really? I mean, I think at this point, honestly, Artie, if we aren't seeing the hand of God on our life, we maybe just don't even want to see it, because yeah. it's there. Mm-hmm. But I also think in this conversation that we're talking about perceptions and, you know, when I get up on a stage, no one would ever think there's any type of insecurity. I also think you, in talking to women about overcoming fear, which I know is something that you do, mm-hmm. I think people might look at you and look at your career and look at where you've been and what you've done and what you've accomplished and think, well, she's not afraid. She just goes for it.
Yeah, I know.
And that's why I think it's really important, because I mean, do you think, I mean, this is kind of what I think, but how do you think that perceptions of other women and their accomplishments perhaps keep us from conquering our fears and moving forward with what we want to do?
I know that I will look at some women in particular, right? And I'll go, well, I'm not built like she is. So yeah. I can't do what she does. So why even try? So I'll just watch New Girl for another couple of hours, which that's where I'm at right now. honestly, I should just sort of look at myself, because if anyone thinks that about me, they're like, oh, she's just so courageous. She just goes for it. She has so much confidence. That, I mean, I wish I could drag my husband in here. He's probably listening on the other side of the door going, I have so many stories of how I've had to pick her up off the floor and kick her out the door and tell her to go. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like so many times yeah. where I have just been like, I don't want to go. I can't do it. I'm not made for this. I'm not equipped for this. I'm in the wrong place. I shouldn't be here. Lord, why did you put me here? I'm just going to be humiliated. That's my biggest thing. I'm just going to be humiliated. Everyone's going to know that I'm, you know, that I've been pretending this whole time, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the truth. That's the truth about what's going on in here. You might see like a smiley face, but on the inside, that's what's going on. So if that's true for me, then that's probably true for a lot of women. I do think that there are some women that are just sort of like, that never bothers them, and they just go. They don't have any of those issues whatsoever. Good for them. You know what I mean? But I think the lie is that we think that only one kind of person can fulfill the dream that God has for them. I mean, that's the advantage that we have as children of God. Yeah. Is that we don't have to have any of those things. We don't need to read the self-help books. We don't have to do the 10-step plan. We don't have to do any of that. We just step forward in all of our messiness and all of our flaws and all of our less than-ness, and he fills it all in for us. Mm-hmm. So that's, my goodness. I mean, I think if more people knew that, you obviously don't want that to be the selling point of Christ, but I think if more people knew that, I think they'd jump on board more often. That, I mean, I would say 99.99% of everything that I have is because he did it, not because I did it.
It's so true though. And, you know, I think it's fine to say, listen, there are benefits to following Jesus Christ. This is not, it's not transactional. Like we look, I think when we think about that, we think of slimy salesman kind of thing, mm-hmm. but he himself says, remember all my benefits. What is that? Mm-hmm. Psalm 103 or whatever. And then goes on to list the benefits. So to me, it's like, well, there are benefits of following Jesus. Of course,
yeah.
That it's called abundant life. It's called, yeah, more than what we could do without him. And so, yeah, that's the point. I mean, I think that's the beauty of the whole thing. And you're right. I mean, I'm telling you, Artie, I mean, there's literally nothing that I could have accomplished without the Lord. And when I can tell you, when I'm away from the Lord, when I am, mm-hmm, when I am not walking as closely with him as I know that I need to be, I can tell in, yeah, my relationships. I can tell in, mm-hmm, my writing. I can tell in my mental process. I mean, yeah, just yesterday I had to stop my work, and I don't like to stop my work because I like to work, mm-hmm, in the middle of my work. I said, God, I had to confess something, and I had to stop because I could feel myself unraveling, yeah, mentally in a, yeah, way. And, yeah, it's a practice that happens all the time. I think it's so, mm-hmm, important. Mm-hmm. So I love we're having this conversation about, yeah, all the things. I mean, whether it's work or accomplishment or you know, even our mental health and all of those things.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's huge. And I love that you just said that, because I think that I sometimes carry around this misapprehension that, I'm saved, right? I got the little cross sticker on my forehead. I'm all good. I'm in. And that's it. We're done. It's all over. And yes, he does everything for me. So peace out. Mm. And so then I will sort of lay back a little bit, and I won't be spending time with him, and I won't be checking in with him, and he won't be checking in with me, and we won't be doing all these things. Slowly, 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 I start taking over. And I start going, well, there's this thing on my list and this thing on my list and this thing on my list. And I have to do all these things. Then it becomes, I can't do all these things. Then I start stressing out. And then finally, when I'm on the floor, like, Lord, I am miserable. I'm such a mess. Now I'm going to come crawling back to you and be like, oh, I just can't do it. How, you know, these are all the things that I need help with. And every single time I get the sense, he gives me this vision of like a duck in a pond, and all the little baby ducks are around it, and the baby ducks are all doing their own thing, and the mother duck goes quack quack, and all of the ducks come along behind her, and they go in a row, and they go where they're supposed to go. And he's sort of like, I am the mother duck. If you would just put me at the front, all the other things will line up behind me, and we will be on our way. But you keep trying to do it on your own way. You know what I mean? They're not meant to follow you. They're meant to follow me. And I, for some reason, there is something in me that goes, well, I don't know if that's true though, Lord. There's been a lot of things where I've like asked you to do it and you haven't done it, frankly. Yeah. And so, you know, there are some places where your track record has not been what I wanted it to be.
Yeah. And that's real.
Yeah. And
that's real.
Yeah. And I think that is, in those cases, that's when, yes, you do have to have a little bit of blind faith, right? But your blind faith is built on the other ways in which he has not only answered your prayers in the affirmative, he's answered your prayers in the negative, and he's answered your prayers in the not yet, you, yeah, know, they're always answered.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I do think, yes, there are moments where plenty of moments, multiple moments in my own life where I've been like, God's not here. God's, mm-hmm, not listening. God's, mm-hmm, absent, you know, all, mm-hmm, of those things. I do think it has to go on your past experience sometimes, and you have to draw upon those things. And I do think that's the stones of remembrance. And that's the, mm-hmm, you know, it is, it's all about, the Bible is constantly, from the Old Testament to the New Testament, it's remembering God, literally to Revelation, from the, it's all about remembering God. And so, oh, I think that's so important.
Yeah.
You know, I also, and I know this is something that you could talk about for a long time, but I feel like it's important to bring this up, because you also advocate for women battling postpartum depression. Mm-hmm. And I don't think enough people talk about that.
Yeah.
And you had to deal with that obviously yourself, but what is just something that you wish you knew then that you know now that might help someone who's just dealing with this maybe for the first time?
Yeah. Yeah, I think the things that I really needed to hear when I had it were, it's not your fault, because postpartum mental health, a lot of it makes you think that you've done something wrong. Like you're not doing a good enough job, or at least for me, I wasn't doing a good enough job. And that's why I was in this position. So it's not your fault. It's not forever. Mm. And you will get over it. Mm. You know, I think when someone said, you know, when I kind of started to hear those messages, I was like, okay, this is not forever. You know, there is an end to this. And I remember talking to God and going, you know, listen, it took me so long to get pregnant and have a baby and all these things. And I was like, well, why would you do that? And then give me this, like, this is so, I don't know. Really liking your storytelling here, Lord. And I just got the sense that he was like, because I know you'll go and redeem the time. Mm. And I think I'd always been looking for something. Like I sort of felt like, oh, I have this amazing career, but I don't have like a cause. I don't have anything that I can sort of give back. And once I went through that, I was like, oh no, like women shouldn't have to go through this and be blindsided by it, you know? And so that's, I have, you know, whenever there was like a cooking competition, we competed for charity. That was always the charity that I competed for. Was it's called Postpartum Support International, PSI. It's postpartum.net. So okay. if you feel like you're in trouble, then go to postpartum.net. There's a warm line there. Call it, leave a message, tell them where you live, and a volunteer from your town will call you back with all the resources that are available to you.
Okay. That's perfect. Okay, perfect. We're going to put that in the show notes. And I love that resource. I think that is amazing. Thank you for talking about this for just a couple of minutes, because I know mm-hmm. for someone that was a game changer. I talked at the top of the show about how, you know, I'm not like a fantastic cook. I think, you know, my family likes what I fix, but it's not
that's
like,
good.
You know, whatever. Right. That's the thing. But let's just say, let's say that someone, I will say that the Food Network, watching things on Food Network or like whatever it is, cooking show, has helped me, because you learn like what spices and what kind of, also it just made me a little more confident to just try stuff, like throw some stuff in a pot, whatever.
Great.
So, but if someone's listening and they're like, I'm not a confident cook, I don't know how to cook, or I just got married, I don't know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. What is just a quick little piece of advice that you would give them?
I would say it kind of goes in line with everything we've been talking about. Even the most confident, consummate cooks that you have seen on television mm-hmm. have made crappy food.
Oh, I love it. Okay. Yeah.
Myself at the top of that list. You know what I mean? It just happens. But of course, I know that this is something we all know and we've heard. But you don't learn when you do things perfectly every single time. You don't. You know, we don't learn by following recipes to the T. I mean, we do, because I'm writing recipes and I'm testing them, and so follow them to the T. However, we learn when we make a mistake, when we misread the recipe, when we leave something on too long. We'll never make that mistake again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And these days, especially when there's so much information coming at us all the time, we don't have the capacity to remember all of that. So I think mistakes help us remember things way more. And maybe there's something about the altars of the stones of remembrance in that too, you know, because usually someone had made a mistake along the way and then God comes to the rescue and they're like, oh my gosh, I'll never forget it.
That's good. That's actually really true. And a good tie-in that maybe I'll remember next time I'm in the kitchen to make a blunder, which will definitely happen. Although I will say, Artie, I don't cook near as much anymore now that the kids are not little. Fill in this blank for me. Mm-hmm. The kitchen shows the love of God by
showing his kindness in abundance. Mm. You know, because we could be cows. Mm-hmm. Now, listen, I'm not inside a cow. Maybe every blade of grass tastes completely different to it, you know, but we have so much variety in our lives. I mean, look at the different kinds of tomatoes you could grow in one season. True. We have so much variety and there's not really that much reason for it. You know, yes, there are different vitamins and minerals available and all that stuff. But he could have made it really boring for us, but he didn't, because he loves us and he wants to make life fun for us and joyful. And that's his character. Like he is, I think I forget that he is joy. Mm. And so for me, when I get to cook, I am reminded of his nature, which is that he's a creative mm. and that he's joyful and that he likes to try new things. Mm. Well, I mean, that nothing's new to him, but you know what I'm saying? He likes to introduce us to new things and he likes us. I mean, mm. you know, you don't bend over backwards for people when you don't like them, unless you're doing it to make a point.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So true. Yeah.
And so I think about that a lot when I cook.
I love thinking about it in that way, you know, that just that you're right. The variety, the taste, the abundance, the beauty, the colors of food, the fact mm-hmm. that he gave us taste buds to be able to taste things. What gifts. Yeah. Thank you for that. Gosh, this has been, what I really want to do is talk to you for about 7 more hours.
Yeah, but me too.
I know that we don't have time, but maybe at some time we'll be able to hang out and meet. Yes. I just appreciate you so much coming
Thank
on
you,
and I love your resources, but I also just love who you are. I just love who you are, Artie. And I just celebrate that and support that so much. I have one last question and I ask mm-hmm. it of every single guest. And I love this because I know how much you do love Jesus. Here's my last question. What is the last thing that you would say about Jesus if you could only say one more thing?
I went through a period of my life where, I mean, I've been married since I was 24, so this is a weird thing, but I went through a period of my life where I would say, "Oh Lord, you are my soul's husband." And I would say that over and over again because there was something. It was like, when I said that, it was like Jesus went from being this far away to being all the way up close to my nose, like just like mm-hmm. right here. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he moved. I think I moved, you know?
Yeah.
But I think that intimacy, the idea that, I mean, there is intimacy that you have with your spouse that you have with nobody else, right? You know what I'm talking about. You know.
I do.
And that kind of intimacy is like, it's a drop in the bucket compared to the kind of intimacy that the Lord wants to have with us. Mm,
so true.
So that's what I would say.
Mm, so beautiful. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for being who you are. And we'll put a pin in this and have more discussions later.
I would love that.
You've been listening to Jesus Over Everything with Lisa Whittle. Follow us on Instagram. Subscribe to us wherever you get podcasts. Jesus Over Everything is a production of Joe Productions. Executive producer, Lisa Whittle. Produced and edited by Lainey Thomas. Art by Noelle Rhodes. If you love this show, would you help spread the word by leaving us a short review and rating? It helps people find us and hear more about Jesus.